From ACB Radio Mainstream, welcome to Tuesday Topics. For the next hour, we will be discussing a topic of interest to blind and visually impaired people. And now, from Miami, Florida, the host of Tuesday Topics, Paul Edwards.
Good evening. I am Paul Edwards in Miami, Florida. It's wonderful to have everyone here on Tuesday Topics. I'd like to thank my producer, Brian Charleston, for all of his efforts on behalf of our program. And I would really like to express appreciation to Steve Bauer, who edits this program and turns it from chaos into broadcastable radio. So thank you so much, Steve. We appreciate it. And of course, George Buys of Talking Community, without your software and your support, we would not be able to do what we are doing. Tonight on Tuesday Topics, we're going to be exploring litigation. I don't know how much interest I have in spending a lot of time, though we probably will, on lots of specific litigation. I'm more interested in kind of some general notions of how litigation affects the blindness system. We've had lots of opportunities over the past few weeks to understand the way litigation operates. We have the American Council of the Blind involved in suing the Treasury Department. We have the National Federation of the Blind and the American Council of the Blind essentially on two different sides of that issue. We've had two other cases that have been a part of our discussions for the last year or two, which have reappeared in the news. One of those is the guide dog case in the state of Iowa, where a young lady was denied access to the rehabilitation center there because she wanted to be accompanied by her guide dog while there. And she was told that during the time that she was at the center, she would have to utilize a cane for her travel and that her guide dog was not going to be allowed to be there. And there's also an intriguing case in New York where a lady has sued fast food restaurants because those fast food restaurants didn't have large print menus and the folks who were there seemed unwilling to read to her all of the items that were on the menu. And the cases themselves are interesting, but really what's happened to them is also interesting. And so as we discuss all of those things, we'll also, I think, be able to get some ideas as we go along about just what impact litigation does have on us as blind people and on the blindness system. If one blind group is suing another blind group, is that an issue? Do blind people gain from litigation, or do they actually lose from it? Those are some of the things that I hope we'll end up talking about as we go along tonight on Tuesday Topics. So I guess one of the things that we might start on is the Treasury case, and perhaps someone might start off by saying whether the Treasury case has been good for the blindness system, and even if we decide that it's been positive overall, are there components of that Treasury case that may be downers? So whoever wants to may feel free to jump in on this question.
Of course it's good for blind people. This is Scott Marshall, by the way, from Virginia. I would love to testify Thursday with Mark Maurer on this case. I think what I would do is I'd start out by dropping my wallet that I knew in advance had quite a few bills in it and asking the committee chairperson, since he sort of looks like a trustworthy person, to try to help me sort out my money. It's a very simple discrimination issue. It's a federal program that is supposed to be usable by and accessible to people with disabilities. It isn't. And the fact that Mark Maurer can play with his money and has no problem sorting it is really irrelevant. There is no question that You know, on that theory, we might as well just dump the whole notion of reasonable accommodations down the tube if some of us can use them or need them and some of us don't. But anyway, good evening, everybody. My blood pressure is up high, and I just took two blood pressure pills. So this topic does get me energized.
So, Scott, how would you respond to the argument that some people have made that all that the Treasury suit demonstrates is how divided blind people are, and that in fact us raising the issue simply constitutes further dividing the blindness community?
Oh, I'm so sorry about that. I cry crocodile tears over that division. You know, nobody would have the, I'm sorry, there's a family room, to raise that issue with any of the other civil rights organizations, would they? Would you ever say to a black organization, well, gee, you know, if all the black advocates weren't on the same side of the issue, that this is division and you shouldn't do it? I don't think so.
Well, I think the important thing to remember here, too, is that the NFB originally started this by bringing forth a solution to accessible money to Congress, and it failed. And since the ACB has been successful in getting this done and actually, you know, getting the appeal to turn their way, it's been the NFB has taken the opposite position of being against it. One would wonder if it were the NFB who originally had won the appeal or had originally won their idea through Congress, then you kind of wonder what they would think. You know, they say that there's money identifiers and things like that, and I really do not think that every blind person in America should have to go out and buy a $200 or $300 money identifier, because that's how much they really are. I mean, you might be able to get one for $99, but I doubt it.
I think the other fascinating thing about the current state of the NFB's position, I don't know if folks saw the press release that they issued today, but the press release that they issued today made all of their old points, but added a new one. Instead of disdaining to make that issue one of theirs any longer, their press release today indicated that the National Federation, as the largest organization of blind people and the only organization with the right to speak for blind people, demands to be at the table. And I found that new position fascinating, especially since it appears to correspond to a resolution that they passed at their convention that essentially says, should the Treasury determined that it will not appeal, the Federation is authorized to demand that they be given a place at the table so as to have a lot to say about the shape of the solution that emerges. It's a fascinating change of position.
Yeah, Paul, Joe, I don't know whether you can hear me now. I'm having trouble with my sound effects. I don't hear anybody else push the buttons like I used to, but I do when I push it. So, I'd like to comment. I think that these things have to be litigated. We have to come to some type of an agreement. We need equipment. We need money identifiers. But the Treasury bills should be changed because not everybody can buy the money identifiers. And I just wish that we would get together and work these things out, because that's why the blind community is so fragmented. As you know, I hear the Marlena show, and it's getting worse. And now the GW Micro is getting sued, and I just hope it doesn't break the bank, and ACB won't comment on it. They're not attorneys, but I think they should comment. I just wanted to put that in, and we should maybe try and help, because freedom has been asked to go on the radio here on ACB, and they won't. And there's just a lot of people that are having a lot of problems with JAWS, and these companies, I see what Mitch said when he said if we push them, they may go out of business. Well, they may or may not go out of business, but it certainly breaks our budget, and they don't even treat us fairly. The enormous cost, like Brian Charlson has said, in some of these products is just ridiculous. Most sighted people who I speak with don't realize this, think we can get all kinds of help from the state agencies, and we really can't, unless you're in some form of rehab program where you're working, so I just wanted to touch on that. Thanks.
Paul, I'm wondering if it's okay if we talk about the Target lawsuit and whether we think that that's good and representation for the blind or not.
Absolutely, Jeff. And by the way, this is Jeff Bishop from Phoenix, Arizona. Usually we were doing programs opposite each other, so I am overjoyed with the fact that now that Jeff is taking at least a hiatus from Main Menu, he's actually able to join us. For the sake of our listeners, Jeff, why don't you briefly describe what the Target lawsuit was about, who filed it, and what the outcome appears to have been. And then we'll see what Scott has to say about it from a legal point of view or from a lawyerly point of view as well. So go for it, Jeff.
Okay. First of all, I'm from Tucson, and we have this rival thing going between Phoenix and Tucson. So it's best not to make that mistake again. No, I'm kidding. I'm kidding. Okay. Well, you know, I don't know if actually the lawsuit has been settled yet. But basically, the NFB brought forward a lawsuit against Target Corporation on behalf of a number of blind people who have stated that the lawsuit basically states that the website has been inaccessible due to improper marking of tags and things of this nature. Now, I don't know. I know what the current state of the website is, and that's really what I'd like to talk about. I really think that the lawsuit was filed at a time when the Target website was going through a transition to Amazon's web store. And if you were to visit Target now, you'll find that it's completely accessible. I have been able to make purchases, and I have not found an area that I have not been able to utilize on the website. And as far as I understand, and someone can update me on this because I obviously may not have the most recent information, but the lawsuit is continuing, and they're still making the same claims, as I understand. And I'm not sure that that's really appropriate, and I'm not really sure that the lawsuit should seek for exorbitant fees and outcomes when a solution has been provided. Perhaps the court costs should be paid, but that really should be the end of it. I think that this gives blind people a bad name when we ask that things be made accessible, and then we continue to press them just to make a point. And I'm not sure that's a good thing. I really don't. I think we're too much of a small market, not to say that we shouldn't sue and continue those efforts when solutions have not been provided. However, when they are, those need to be recognized.
Jeff, are you using JAWS?
I've tested it with both JAWS and Window Eyes.
Okay.
Scott, do you want to jump in and talk about the Target lawsuit for a minute?
Actually, I'm not as familiar as I should be with the Target, with the current state of the Target lawsuit. I'm sorry to say. What I think is interesting, though, is the overall strategy that it seems that some advocates have on litigation. And, you know, it might be the right strategy in some ways. And it's get in your face, put as much pressure on people as possible. If that requires a lawsuit, fine. And then when money is exchanged, then you go away, and then all is fine. And that's, you know, I have mixed emotions about that strategy, frankly. And I suspect that's what's going to happen with the Target suit, and I know it's happened with other suits as well. You know, necessarily pointing a finger at anybody.
Brian from Watertown, Massachusetts here. I have no problem with the idea of blindness advocates, both in the name of their organizations and on behalf of a slate of individuals, choose to get the attention of certain industries by picking, if you pardon the pun, targets, and then pursuing them a bit. Jeff, like you, I have to think that there was a difference between target pre-suit and target post-suit. It may have, in fact, been levied or filed originally while target was in transition, but my experience with websites hasn't been so trusting as that. So I guess for me, I would say that it's possible that Target, which I did not use their website prior to the suit, I still haven't personally used their website for anything, that it could have been inaccessible from the get-go, and that they've made modifications. Until such time as two things happen, I don't know that I'd withdraw the suit. Those two things would be, one, that is demonstrable by a company that does not have a vested interest in their evaluation, that in fact it has reached a level of accessibility that's appropriate, and two, that Target acknowledges an obligation to maintain their site in an accessible fashion, rather than, gee, right, this iteration's accessible, but we're not making any commitments that the next iteration is going to be accessible. And I think the Target lawsuit, while I'm a little concerned on the financial side of the suit, has served us, the blindness community, in another way, and that is it's got the attention of industry, and if one wants to pursue the accessibility of any online business, you can always point at the Target lawsuit and say, be careful not to go there. And I think we already have benefited a bit from that. The American Council of the Blind has been involved, both as a national organization and its affiliates, in working through Lainey Feingold and Linda Dedarian. And it is not by accident that virtually all of their negotiations include people and or organizations from California where the Target suit was filed, because it certainly gets their attention.
I think, though, that the point that Jeff raises, that we're kind of blithely passing by, is an important one, and we need only go back a couple of years to our experience with the Southwest Airlines suit to very clearly at least draw some parallels and say, here was a situation where a relatively inept computer user indicated that the Southwest Airlines website was not usable. Well, for most of us, the Southwest Airlines site prior to the suit and subsequent to the suit has actually been pretty easy to use. And so one of the questions that I think we have to ask, and I guess I'd at least invite Scott to start us off with the response to this question, how ought we to deal with suits like that? Should we expect blind people to have a degree of expertise with a computer, or is it appropriate for us to judge access to websites at the level of the lowest common denominator? What do you think, Scott? How should we deal, or how even perhaps should the courts deal with a claim that a website that is inaccessible when a computer user who is actually reasonably competent actually finds that site pretty accessible?
Paul, this is Robert. I don't know if you knew I was there, but you know, this is an important topic to me, and when you get a chance, I'd like to talk about the GW and the freedom issue.
Okay, Robert. Scott, my question?
Well, interesting. I've had a long argument with a friend of mine who thinks that websites ought to be fully accessible if you're using the old, you know, version of links. I don't think that's realistic. I think the standard should be sort of the reasonable man or the ordinary user. I mean, not the power user, Jeff, like you are. But there's got to be some balancing of all that. And I think there is a, or should be, an obligation on people to use, you know, the latest technology to the extent possible when trying to, you know, access a site. The real problem with any of these cases, and we're not the only groups that have this problem, is you got to pick them very, 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 very carefully. And you need them to be handled by people that know what they're doing. And that's always not possible, even though there isn't really much money in ADA litigation. You get people that get on a mission, and then they can really screw up the law quite badly if things are not handled properly. And just another comment on the target thing, too. And Robert, I want to hear your perspective too on the freedom thing too. There's a real serious issue about the whole coverage of internet commerce, especially if it's not connected to a brick and mortar store, that hopefully we can address in this ADA Restoration Act. Although our friends in the broader disability community aren't as being all that terribly responsive to that concern. But it is a real issue, and I think there is a problem in the target thing with respect to that issue, a jurisdictional problem. On one level, I can understand why they would want some kind of a decision on it, just to clarify the state of the law.
Yep. I think Scott's point maybe needs just a little clarification for some of the folks who haven't been tied to kind of legal issues forever and ever. One of the questions that's arisen under the ADA is how far does its coverage actually lie? And while there now seems to be a general feeling that the Target suit, by the way, has reinforced, that Title III of the ADA covers entities where there is a store attached. So Southwest Airlines, because there are offices in airports, and Target, because there are stores, their websites appear to be coverable. But a place like Amazon.com, where there really is not a brick-and-mortar store, may not in fact be covered under Title III of the ADA. And that's one of the issues that I think all of us in the blindness community are behind. We want to be sure that the coverage under Title III of the ADA is gradually extended so that websites such as Amazon, in fact, do have a positive obligation. And please note in parentheses, I am not at this point making any claims about the accessibility or inaccessibility of Amazon.com, end of parentheses. I guess we probably do need to touch on the freedom suit, and I guess that Robert Miller in Tallahassee, Florida, is as good a place as any to start. So, Mr. Miller, the floor is yours.
Can I make a comment after Paul?
Yes, you may, Joe. And Robert, you might start by telling folks who might not know about it what the suit is and what it's about, because we haven't done that yet.
Well, I think what we've talked about in the past was, how we deal with agencies, governments, or different situations or actions or the way that you're treated. But I was in St. Augustine all last week and trying to do the right thing for the Alumni Association, and someone came up and said that Freedom had filed a suit against UW Micro. And Paul, thanks to you, with some of the information that you gave me while I was away and had wireless, I was able to read the suit and to read the patent. And basically, Freedom has filed a suit against UW Micro in a violation of a patent that they basically filed in, I think, 2006. And it basically deals with the ability of JAWS to put place markers, which is a common word, on a web page, and to be able to put multiple place markers on that page to move among those, although they're not as accurate as they should be. And GW, in their pending release, which they made very well known to GW Micro that they were, or to Freedom, that They were doing that in the release. They filed a court suit in regards to infringement on their patent. And the thing to me about this is, and I've read a lot of messages that are out there, first of all, people think that, you know, if the suit goes on and say that freedom prevails, then they, you know, it could stifle the development of GW Micro. Some of the other things that I've heard is that, you know, yes, they do have a patent. It's a clear thing that Freedom has the patent. And the issue is, was it given a patent, you know, a patent in its right respect? For instance, in a word processor, regardless of what you're using, you have a find command. And I think the thinking of GW is that, you know, this is a common feature that would be offered in any, you know, top screen reader, but for some reason Freedom thinks that they have the right to that. I think some of the other scuttlebutt that I've heard is that, you know, they're not real happy with the scripting that comes, that's going to be released in the 7.0 version of WindowEyes, and maybe this was a way to delay that. So, you know, it, you know, legal action can be positive or negative. I've tried to reframe from, you know, really saying a whole lot about it or my opinions, because it was clear in Freedom's lawsuit that anyone who was an agent, dealer, or distributor would be liable for legal action also. So just to open it up and get some feedback, that's kind of the way I've looked at it from this point.
Okay, may I comment, Paul, on both of these now?
Yeah, Joe, don't be long, though.
Well, I think Freedom, I'm glad to have you with us, Bob. Still having trouble with the sounds here. I tried to get them off, so I don't know who's speaking always, and I can't keep the sounds on at the same time, so I have them both on. I think Freedom needs, maybe you guys can help me later, I think Freedom needs to be taught a lesson. They think they can control everybody and do whatever they want. And, I mean, their products do work, but there are lots of problems with their products, as some of you know who are on the list. And there is no toll-free number. And they're, in my opinion, you may or may not agree, they're making money hand over fist. And I think GW, I know they, those two companies don't get along. I think GW is trying. And I think they have to be taught a lesson, just like Target. And I think the suit should be going. I think you should get right in their face and get your blood pressure down there. And I think that's what we need. I do agree with your friend. All websites should be accessible. They can be accessible for the sighted. They can be accessible for the blind. We are always left at the end hanging on just by a thread. As you know, more and more products are out, programs and stuff. Now everything is DVD, and yet there's no accessible DVD players. And I think we really need to get some fight behind this and get these things done. I know it may not be a popular view, but that seems to the only thing that seems to work sometimes. Thanks.
Paul, this is Mika Paikala in Boston. I'd like to comment, if I could, before we get too far astray of these topics. I personally haven't bought something from Target, either before the suit was filed or after, though I extensively use Amazon.com. But I think we could submit, for the sake of argument, that at one point the Target website was not accessible, and we might say that even now that it is accessible, hypothetically. But I still, I think the suit, to the extent that it's still going on, is still active, because at one point Target probably blew off the NFB or whoever the plaintiff specifically was about making the site accessible. And then, you know, at some point they came around, but there was this period where, as we often find when we contact a company, they aren't very forthcoming in making their product or service accessible. So I would imagine that they're trying to get damages for that period of time when Target, if you will, was recalcitrant about not making its website accessible. I agree also that this type of suit does create a lot of buzz in the industry, as Brian said. I actually, not specifically looking for them, I ran into two web services today with an accessible CAPTCHA, and in writing to at least one of them, I pointed them to an article about the Target suit. So, I mean, I think if a blindness organization tomorrow sued 25 different websites, that buzz, you know, or talk or chatter in the web development industry would rise, and, you know, there would be more talk about making things accessible, and that, you know, we don't want to be the next Target. And I agree with the gist, too, of what the last gentleman said, that the blind are often kind of left to be last in line for getting accessibility, and that, you know, ACB, NFB, as well as other organizations and consumers, you know, really need to step it up and fight to ensure that these kinds of things are dealt with by private industry in particular.
When you're through, can I just make one quick comment? I want to thank you for agreeing with me. I don't get much support. I'll be quick. Because cable boxes and stuff like that are not accessible, and people say it's unreasonable. It's always unreasonable when it comes to us. So it may be unpopular, but that's the only way for us is to get ahead in this world. Thanks.
And also, just one quick follow-up, as far as the questions raised about should we get a lot of money now, or, you know, should we just say it's fine now that they made it accessible? I think one of the reasons attorneys aren't really interested in ADA or disability civil rights work, as we've kind of mentioned tonight, is that there's no money in it. I've often heard that, you know, if I ever talk to an attorney about something in the disability civil rights area. So, I mean, if there is money in it, then people are going to be more interested. And, you know, as the saying goes, kind of money talks, and if hypothetically there were a large judgment or settlement with Target, again, that might fuel the fire to make other websites accessible, hopefully well before litigation.
Just keep these lawsuits going, Michael.
From ACB Radio Mainstream, you are listening to Tuesday Topics. If you have comments about the show or a suggestion of a topic you would like to have discussed, send a message to TuesdayTopics@acbradio.org. That's TuesdayTopics@acbradio.org. Once again, the host of Tuesday Topics, Paul Edwards.
So, we've certainly heard a good deal of opinion tonight that suggests that if you're not a part of the blindness system, it's kind of okay to sue you. And if you got to pay money, that's okay too. And eventually that's going to lead to greater accessibility. But what about the situation of, for example, independent living aids and maxi aids, who have a long history of suing each other, or Freedom Scientific and GW Micro, or Freedom Scientific and Saratech? Is there a difference when entities within the blindness movement start suing each other? And if there is, can we define what that is, and do we feel differently about it?
Well, Paul, I think their goals, and actually you have to look into what the suits are. And I think in all the cases of industry, they've either been infringement on a catalog or a patent. And is that really so important? You know, I mean, it's clear that in the GW and the Freedom deal that Freedom did have a patent, but did they really invent anything? Did they really give, you know, something that was quality or groundbreaking? And I think that's what you're going to see, because I can assure you from what I hear that GW is not going to back down like Saratech did.
Yep, I hear all of that, Robert, but I guess what I'm focusing on a little bit more is let's take the Freedom and GW suit. The fact is the blindness community is a relatively small one, and the access technology industry or the sales of product and services industry are both relatively small in terms of the market share that any of these companies are likely to have. And they depend, at least to a degree, and really to a pretty large degree, on the blindness community or states and agencies who support the blindness community for much of their revenues. If, just to take a hypothetical case, Freedom Scientific were to win the suit, were to collect huge amounts of damages to the point that GW Micro were no longer able to survive, would that be a good thing for the blindness community? And if not, why not? I guess that's more my question. When it is outsiders who we are suing or who are being sued, it's one thing. But when groups within our blindness field are filing suits against each other, is there a greater interest at risk in the blindness community than that involves outsiders?
Brian here. I'm disturbed by our reaction whenever there is a suit within or between companies that service the blindness community, the Maxi Aids versus Independent Living Aids business, and now the Freedom Scientific and GW Micro business. We're such a small community that we bring a whole new meaning to the court of public opinion. I'm pretty convinced that that GW Micro is going to defend themselves to the best of their legal representation, and they will win or not win in the suit. Freedom will win or not win in a suit. Inasmuch as the product hasn't been released yet, it is a beta product that had yet to be released, I doubt that damages would be invoked in any kind of significant way, although a cease and desist order is likely to be part of it if Freedom succeeds. The fact of the matter is that if we want companies to invest in research and development in the blindness field, then they have to feel to some degree like they own, you know, the if you will, the results of that research and development. I might feel that the whole concept of web page marking didn't rise to the level of something that I would grant a patent to, but the patent office did grant that patent. And so I guess the issue for GW Micro is to challenge whether that patent should have been granted, not whether or not Freedom, in fact, owned the patent to that process. Saratech, a similar situation, I think, and that is that Saratech, and certainly I didn't give it second thought that Saratech called itself Freedom Box, but clearly when push came to shove, Saratech found it easier to change its name and the name of its product than to pay the legal costs to defend it. I haven't seen that that's hurt them very much, quite honestly. In fact, probably it gave them a little more publicity than they would otherwise have had as the small, because of the size of the company. So I guess in general, I think that it's unfortunate because I've, pardon me, Scott, as the only one I think of as a lawyer here, but only lawyers seem to benefit very much from these kinds of things. They get paid. And those expenses of all the lawyers gets added to the overhead cost of the products and services we buy. So in that regard, I think that it's negative. On the other hand, when people feel and companies feel strong enough about their products and services to defend them, then those who've invested in those companies have to feel good that there's enough value there that they're, it's worth defending.
Interesting comments, Brian, and on the whole, I would agree. I do think, though, that there's a little bit more at stake here. And for us, as you have pointed out, very properly pointed out, you know, with a court of public opinion, it's very, very different in terms of the blind community. I find it problematic that these kind of suits are so readily filed. rather than, you know, sitting down initially and saying, we have a problem, how are we going to resolve it? Unfortunately, I think the problems here are come from the fact that, again, we don't have, you know, Freedom Scientific. Who owns Freedom Scientific? None of us actually knows, because it's a holding company, basically. Actually, I believe the primary owners are in Dubai and not here, which is, and of course the corporation is now registered, as we know, from the in Delaware, though its offices of operation are still in St. Petersburg. It saddens me to think that, you know, we've come to this. I don't know what the answer is. I'm kind of like Brian. I think that the only people who truly win in a suit are the lawyers. But we do have to let these things play out and see where they go. But I do wish that we had other entrepreneurs out there who are willing to get out there and develop a superior product. Sadly, I'm not one. I wish I had the technical ability that Ted Hender had. Still has, assumedly. I don't. I make no claims to that. But, you know, I don't know. I feel like the quashing of competition is not a good thing, but neither do I feel that the government or anybody else can force us to keep our companies from suing each other. I don't know what the answer is.
And that was David McElroy from Visalia, California, by the way. Thank you, David. I guess another question that I might put to folks is, are we operating with an unfair double standard? Here are two companies, and on the face of it, one of those companies believes themselves to be sufficiently wronged to justify a suit. Sometimes people enter into those suits because they believe that by entering into the suit and by depleting the other person's assets, they can drive them out of business so that they will then have a larger portion of the share in the business. But that certainly is a practice that is common, at least, in competitive industry. Are we, in fact, unfair to suggest that a different morality ought to operate simply because a company happens to work in a blindness sector?
Hello, this is Gary Wood from Lansing, Michigan. I don't know that I would say that that's the case, but I think that that's probably true. But I think with this Freedom Scientific versus GW Micro thing, I think it's more of a he said, she said thing. It's more like I had a patent on this, and you violated it, and then the other one can say that they didn't have a patent on it. And I don't know. I'm wondering if all these lawsuits are helpful. I think maybe isn't it better to do some collaboration, you know, kind of working together to try to figure out what the situation is and maybe try to solve the problems between them, if possible. And that's maybe the better way to go.
Well, I understand, you know, what you're saying, and you know, if we're going to talk about this in the context of how it happened, there's, if you go to gwmicro.com/blog, you'll see Doug's statement, and Freedom never made an opportunity to say you're infringing on our patent, how can we work this out, and personally, me as an advocate working with different groups, and Paul, you can attest to this, we had a thing on our website for FCB where we were infringing, I think it was on the Women's League or something like that, and they sent us a letter, and we immediately corrected that. And I think if you have a company that doesn't give another company that opportunity, then there has to be some malicious intent. I know they sued Freedom Box, and who is now Ceratech. And actually, as a distributor of GW Micro products and as a Freedom Scientific, they sent me some pretty nasty letters where they feel like they like to sue. So I think, you know, when you're dealing with civil rights and issues that are beyond blind companies suing blind companies, it is different. It doesn't, you know, there's no difference between the bad guy or the wrong guy. It's what's right. And I think the suit with freedom is totally wrong. And I think they will live to regret it, because if you look at, you know, the way that they dealt with Saratech, that company has grown probably a half or a third of their business again. And it's just, you know, it's totally a different thing when you're dealing with, you know, different issues.
This is Pam Drake in Visalia, California. I think the unfortunate part is here that, well, first of all, I agree with Robert. I think Freedom Scientific has enough public relations issues. I think they're being very short-sighted in what they're doing. But beyond that, I think this just points up the sad fact that this is a small market, and these are for-profit companies. And so the company who is trying to make a profit, and since Ted Hedger has gone, the personal touch seems to have evaporated from Freedom Scientific. And I won't go into a whole diatribe, but we all know the PR problems of which I have spoken. I think the problem is that this is just such a small market. I remember the same issue going on with other companies back in the days of computer aids with Bill Grimm, and back in the days of Raised Dot Computing versus somebody else. I mean, this is nothing new. The sad thing is we're a small market, and some companies are going to try and get ahead no matter what.
Pam, this is Joe from Boston. Hi, glad to meet you. I want to comment on what you and Robert said. I think that's part. Sorry, folks, my clock. So that's part of the problem, but it's also the way we are treated. As you know, Brian, in your headset it sounds kind of mushy. I guess you got to move it again. Something happens. You know the problems as a teacher that we have with the JAWS. How it breaks. How this happens. How that happens. You got to do this and that. It messes up windows. Freedom doesn't give a damn about the blind people. When Henderson was there, from what I heard, they threw him out. We need to make accessibility. I've been trying to get cable boxes accessible, and it isn't working. No one is listening. We need to have it shoved down their throats. Granted, we may suffer a loss, but it's okay to make a profit. But when you charge enormous amounts of money for updates and stuff, and Brian has said this is... the average blind person has a very hard time in getting these products. This stuff is not that easy. If you can't get help or you don't have any money, I mean, these people don't care about this. They don't even have a toll-free number, a layaway plan. So they ask what they get, and I hope that Freedom eventually goes out of business. I think the more of this stuff that happens, I think we have to be feisty. We can't be wimpy and sit on the side and complain and say, oh, how terrible it is. We have to make waves like Martin Luther King and like other groups have done. That's the ambulance going by me. They're not going to pick me up, Paul. So I think this has to happen. Blind people have to get out and make noise instead of, as my friend Elliot would say, mooing.
This is Gary again. I think I do agree with Robert. I am, as of now, a JAWS user, but I think I deplore what's happening here. I'm against this idea of Freedom Scientific suing, GW Micro, and I put it. I was involved with a petition against Freedom Scientific trying to sue Freedom Box or whatever. I mean, I think it's silly. I think it's bad, and I think it's going to hurt everyone in the long run. And I don't know. I think probably I could change if things get too far out of hand with them.
They should go out of business. That would be good for us. Get in better company.
You know, one of my concerns, again, Brian from Watertown, in all of this is when I heard that Freedom had filed this patent infringement lawsuit, I said, no, I have to take myself away from my personal opinions on things and look at it at arm's length a little bit. So let me assume that what I've got here is two companies who are duking it out for market share in a very small niche market as far as world markets are concerned. One company has taken the time and invested the money to file patents on their product and aspects of their product, which they believe made them different than their competition.
Joseph, please fix your headset.
Am I not coming across properly? Somebody's asking for me to fix my headset.
Sorry, Brian. Since I have the mic here, I'll just say, I think... Now, you're making a very good point. This is Pam Drake again. But I think that we also, as consumers, those of us who can, I perfectly understand that there are a lot of people who are receiving their equipment through government contracts, through state agencies, and their employers. But I think that we can also, those of us who can vote with our pocketbooks. As Gary said, switch. Those of us who can contact our agencies and our employers and the people with the purchase orders and tell them there is more than one company out there, and maybe they'll vote there with their wallets, and we don't hear anything wrong with your headset, Brian.
Yeah, Brian, you're fine. Please go ahead.
Pam, I couldn't have said it better.
And I have no problem with that. You know, if I choose to drive a particular drive, trust me, I'm not driving, so you guys are safe on the roads, but to own a particular brand of automobile because I felt good about the purchases I've made of that automobile in the past. I choose not to buy certain automobiles because I don't want to buy into the silent or quiet car industry and be part of the problem that we're fighting as blind consumers. So even though that might be what would be best for me financially, I avoid it. I can make those kinds of decisions for myself. My concern in this battle is that I'm not at all upset by the idea that companies and access technologies make a profit. I really think that's what differentiates the free marketplace from the non-free marketplace, and that we benefit from that. At the same time, I believe that industry has the right to protect its intellectual property. There are times when it's brought to the excess. Take a look at digital rights management is one example of property rights gone mad. Take a look at the whole issue of copyright in general and how that was extended so that nothing ever falls out of copyright and you have to prove, in fact, that a document is abandoned rather than somebody else having to prove that they actually own the copyright to it, those kinds of things. So there's extremes out there in this whole it's mine, it's not yours scenario. But when it comes to our little neck of the woods, so much of this court of public opinion is going to impact things, and not necessarily for the good. I'm one who says that freedom has the right to protect its property, GW Micro has the right to innovate, and it's up to the courts to determine where these two things meet. Not up to me to make that decision. Yes, lawyers are going to make fees in the process, and it's unfortunate that it will cost me as a consumer more because they're going to have to pass those expenses on. But I still think that it's the right place to make those kinds of decisions. I would have preferred it if Freedom Scientific sent a letter to GW Micro saying cease and desist or else. The fact they didn't disappoints me and adds to my personal opinion of the difficulties of working with Freedom Scientific. I'm convinced because of the people I've worked with at GW Micro over the years that they didn't do this in any kind of intentional way, but I don't believe that I have the whole story enough to make a opinion that I'm going to pass on to others as what they should do in terms of walking away with their dollars or coming on board with their dollars. They're going to have to make those decisions themselves, I think. I do think that I have difficulty keeping myself consistent on all of this. I was one of those who felt that ACB had the right to deny access to the ACB exhibit floor to MaxiAids when they were successfully sued multiple times by independent living aides and violated the court orders multiple times, etc., etc., that was the kind of business practice that ACB should not encourage in the blindness community. There may come a day where we feel the same way about a company like Freedom Scientific if there's a pattern of malicious lawsuits. I'm not quite sure, like, as you stated, Rob, that in fact this is malicious. Two cases does not a great pattern make, as far as I'm concerned. So I'm interested in how other people feel.
Oh, Brian, this is Robert again. I think you have to look at the issue in each individual situation, how it's dealt with, and I've certainly talked about that and probably said more than I should. But I think that, you know, being a person that's been involved in adaptive technology, I think I've been in business for almost 17 years now. And I've, you know some of the suits with Arctic and, you know, some of the little squabbles and squibbles. But it seems like that what Freedom has done, they come up with an idea and they write a patent for that. And there was actually, in this particular case, or from some of the stuff that I've read, there's an individual out there who made the suggestion of place markers to Freedom probably a year before they patented it. So who really has the patent for that product? There's been some questions about them being an overseas company, so I think it will certainly be an interesting battle, and I think that GW will probably use their best option or, you know, what they think is beneficial. But I certainly don't think that GW stole technology or reversed engineered software to give them the ability to write place markers, because actually what they have is better.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's clear that we're not going to be able to finish our discussion of litigation in one evening, so we're going to divide this program into two. I hope that you will join the group of us who are gathered this evening to talk about litigation next week, when we continue our discussion of what it's like to get sued if you're part of the blind community and what it's like to sue if you're part of the blind community. Please do join us next week on Tuesday Topic, when we'll see if the suit fits. Ladies and gentlemen, good night.
To participate in the recording of Tuesday Topics, we invite you to join us on Tuesday evenings in the U.S. at 9 p.m. Eastern. That's Wednesday at 1 hour Universal. The program is recorded in the Our Place Politics chat room at ourplace.acbradio.org. That's ourplace.acbradio.org. All you need is a microphone that is plugged into your computer sound card. A few minutes before each program begins, those who are online will be happy to assist with audio checks and to answer questions about the chat room software. An announcement about the show, including information about the topic and the guest speaker, will be emailed to the ACB Radio Friends List. So we hope you will come and join us each week on Tuesday, when Tuesday Topics is being recorded. We'll look for you in the Our Place Politics chat room at ourplace.acbradio.org. Tuesday Topics is a production of ACB Radio Mainstream.